This is Sons of the Flag Radio, brought to you by Fire Engineering Block Talk Radio. Our mission at Sons of the Flag is to revolutionize burn care and quality of life for veterans, first responders, and their families. Sons of the Flag believes that the future of burn care resides in research and development. Our vision is to accelerate the process of testing leading technologies and pushing them into circulation for immediate use by burn survivors across the nation. With that, a tragic event recently occurred that proves our mission at Sons of the Flag is and always will be of extreme and vital importance. Members of the Los Angeles Fire Department suffered significant injuries while battling a fire. We would like to extend our hearts and prayers out to the Los Angeles Fire Department family and pray for their speedy recovery for all members that were affected. And all of us at Sons of the Flag stand with you and ready to assist in any way that we can. Now, let us start tonight's show by honoring our brothers and sisters that we've lost since our last show. Israel Tolentino Jr., Mario Arujo, James Waters, Michael Field, Franklin Williams, John Schaffstall, John Kucher III, David Clark, Eduardo Ramirez, Harold Moore Jr., Robert Riesinger, Donald DiPetrio, Mike Tipolti, Alan Vallega, Edward Chioka, Andrew DiMaggio, David Jameson Jr. May we take a moment of silence for these fallen heroes. On our last episode, our task force director, Chad Gruber, sat down with retired Palm Beach County firefighter Rick George, the colony's fire chief, Scott Thompson, and Conroe fire engineer and president of the Iron Brotherhood Fools, Chase Morgan. And they had a thought-provoking conversation about mediocrity in the fire service. If you'd like to listen to this episode or any of the other Sons of the Flag episodes, then log on to Fire Engineering Blog Talk Radio and look up Sons of the Flag. Be sure to also look up Sons of the Flag on all social media by typing in @SonsOfTheFlag. You can also access information about our mission at Sons of the Flag, find out a bit more of who we are and any of our upcoming events by logging onto our website at www.sonsoftheflag.org. With that, we have a few announcements and updates about some events that Sons of the Flag is participating in and some that we are hosting. Sons of the Flag is teaming up with Carry the Load again this year in a continued effort to bring back the true meaning to Memorial Day. Please join the team at Sons of the Flag and help us raise money and awareness for the Carry the Load mission. Go to www.carrytheload.org and select Join Team and search for Sons of the Flag Organization. Let us all honor these heroes who have given the ultimate sacrifices for our freedom this year. And additionally, through the end of the year, we are running a H1 Hummer sweepstakes that has been customized by Rad Rides. You can join this sweepstakes by logging on to www.sonsoftheflag.org/Hummer. $20 will get you one chance to win and $100 for six chances to win, with all of the proceeds going to fund our mission at Sons of the Flag. A special thanks and shout out goes to Ryan Appleman for the donation of the H1 Hummer to support our cause. On tonight's episode, we sit down with retired Cleveland firefighter and the face of strategic fire training, Jeff Shoup. Jeff Shoup will be discussing integrity, loyalty, and being the senior man. I am now going to turn this conversation over to our task force director, Chad Gruber.
Tonight, I have the honor of being joined by one of my mentors in the fire service. Tonight, we have Jeff Shoup, the senior man on Sons of the Flag Radio. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing good. Hope you are too, and I take it you are. So we're here, yes, and that's a good time.
Everything's good. Y'all will have to forgive us. We're trying our first recording off of Zoom, so even though y'all can't see us, Jeff and I aren't the best on technology, so we're trying to make this thing work. Jeff, before we start, you have been, first, let me thank you for as much as you've done for Sons of the Flag. A lot of people don't know this, and you don't talk about it very often, but every time you go teach a class, in some way or another, it's a benefit in Sons, or you will do a benefit, like a Tactics on Tap, with the money this raise going to Sons of the Flag. And thank you so much for doing that for us. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to do it, because it's fun for me also, and it's enjoyable for me.
And, you know, that's, I think it's a win-win every time we do something like this. For those that don't know, Jeff has a very historic career in the fire service. You want to tell us about your career, Jeff? I know it, but you don't want to hear me telling your story. So,
oh golly, doesn't everybody have a historic career when they stay in the fire service?
It should be for them.
Some have careers that, you know, are just that much, you know, a little bit more, a little bit less, a little bit more, a lot more, a lot less. I don't know, you know, but everyone has their own history in a job. And I guess if you're asking me how I got into the job and how I got attracted to the job and all that other stuff and all the things that I've been able to do so far in the job, yeah, I guess I've had somewhat of a historic career. Well, I've been lucky. I've been fortunate.
First of all, not everybody has had as long as a career as you have.
That is true. That is true. Like, again, I am so lucky. I'm lucky, and I can say I'm lucky to be here right now, you know? So.
Yeah, I have a feeling, if you don't mind, we'll talk about that a little bit later. So you've been a firefighter, what, 47 years?
It's coming up to that. You know, I started in 74 as a career firefighter. That's when I got hired. And you know, I retired in 2011, and then a few months after that, I took a chief officer's job down in the Carolinas for a little while, and I came home and just fell right back into the instructing or the presentation work and so forth, and was very, like I said, very fortunate to have that and literally build it into what it is right now, where we've got a great group of guys with strategic fire training, yourself included.
Thank you.
That's what we're all about. We're all about, in strategic fire training, our backgrounds, our histories, each one of ours, our knowledge, our experiences, and so forth. So, you know,
and not to make a joke out of it, I feel pretty old. You know, I've got 20 years in, and you started the fire department when I was 2. So you must be doing something right to make it this long. For those that don't know Jeff's history, his career fire department was the Cleveland Fire Department in Cleveland, Ohio. And then he went to South Carolina. Jeff, like I said earlier, you do so much for Sons of the Flag. Let's go ahead and discuss how you and I got hooked up and how you found out about Sons of the Flag.
Well, tell me if I'm wrong on this, but our story starts in Maryland, right?
Actually, it starts in Austin.
You know, you're right. See, that's why, yeah. At my age, sometimes those little details get away from you. You're right. Okay, that's right.
We were at the work conference.
We were at the work conference, and what was that, 2018 or 17?
It may have been 18.
2018, right. And that's right. Yeah, we were put in this hotel together, all the instructors, outside of Austin, Texas. And of course, you know, at nighttime, you know, you could put a bunch of people, firemen together in a hotel lobby, and little things come out like little cans of this, little bottles of that, and so forth, you know, and hey, I got some good Texas whiskey here, and hey, try this and whatever. Next thing you know, the conversations go, and you know, that's pretty much how we all met.
You know, I had never met you prior to that night. I met you that morning. It was 2018 in April in Texas. That was a weird morning because, if I remember correctly, Texas had a freak cold front come through that day. And it was 30 degrees with wind blowing, and I was out on the training ground wearing shorts, setting up for our class the next day, for my class the next day, and I was wearing shorts. I was freezing to death, and I didn't want to look like a sissy in front of these Cleveland guys. And so said hi to you and didn't really, you know, introduce myself, but didn't really get to spend that much time with you. And then I wanted to come up, and I mean, you'd done Portland that year for Sons of the Flag, Portland Firemanship being one of the biggest conferences that raises money for us. And, you know, you always volunteer your time for that. Don't ask for any money to do that one. And, you know, it helps us raise quite a bit of money. Cody Trestrail does a great job. So I came over to thank you, and, you know, being a good Texan, you have to bring gifts when you come to thank somebody. So I had a bottle of Texas whiskey, and I think I had too much because my class – I know you were going home the next day, but my next day was miserable teaching high-rise operations after drinking a bunch of whiskey. Not my brightest time, but, hey, it got me to introduce to you, and I asked you to – if you'd mind teaching a conference for us up in Maryland. And then that takes us to Chesapeake.
Right. And so we get up to Maryland, and I was doing a classroom on the one day, hands-on the next day.
Yes, sir.
So due to some circumstances, I had a number of people in the class, not a very big class, but I think we had 14 or 15 students in there. And then I had you and Scott Thompson.
Yes, sir.
And that was great to have you guys in there because we just started talking during break. And I noticed you and Scott were sitting in the back of the class. And a lot of these things that I was presenting and putting on the board and everything else in that day, like it's like these guys were right on. You know, they were taking in everything I was saying right along with the students and so forth. And so that's how that introduction to each other, you know, went down.
Yeah, and then fortunately, I have to go ahead and say it, Mr. Mateer didn't come with you, so you were left shorthanded on the training ground.
Yeah, you can thank him, you know, for that. You know, again, when we heard that we had such a low number of students signed up for the hands-on, which was going to be the following day, I had Diedrich with me, Jeff Diedrich, for those of you who might not wonder who that is. I drove separately because I was doing the classroom the first day, and then we were going to do the hands-on the second day. So Jeff drove down by himself on that day that I was doing the classroom work. Again, Chad's already there. And so the next day comes around, and we're getting the students together, and Chad came out to our site. Oh, by the way, I think we had dinner that night together.
Yeah, we had dinner that night.
Right.
And you asked me you knew I had taught some classes with Brian Brush and had worked with him a little bit and said, hey, it looks like we're going to have a little bit more numbers than I thought. I just got two of us. Would you mind helping with the class? And I'm sitting here going, holy crap. I have no business being involved with Jeff Shoup and doing this. So I'm just going to move hose and say, yes, sir. And I had to borrow gear.
Yeah.
I had to borrow gear. And they gave me the ugliest damn helmet I think I've ever worn in my whole life.
Yeah, well, you were going home, and they didn't know who you were after that. So, hey, let's give him this helmet, and we'll forget about him, right?
Yeah.
And that's how that went down. But, that day went on, and really, it went very well. Yeah, we had a lot of fun, and a lot of good times, a lot of good evolution, stretching, and so forth. You know, we had the engine out there. We had a truck out there, so we got to do a lot of stuff, you know, besides hand line stretches into the building. We also had stretches up the aerial ladder to the upper floors, and Jeff had him doing a rope drop on the backside of the structure. It was kind of like, you know, this is pretty neat. The three of us are handling this pretty well. Well, one of the things about an instructor who puts a group together, if you need help and you come across people, you look at how they relate to you. You look at how they relate to the students. You look at how they present themselves. Are they confident? Are they upfront and forthright? And by forthright, I mean, are they giving the right message? Are they giving the right material and so forth? And is a person like that looking like they're going to be a team member of the instructors, because let me tell you, you know, if you're an instructor, you know, like I was taught years and years ago by older people, you know, if you don't know the answer, don't act like it, don't phony it. And that's a good quality, you know your limitations, know what your shortcomings are, if you have any on a particular subject or something, and just say, hey, you know what, I don't have the answer, let's see what we can do to find it. If you can do that, you know, that's a good quality right there.
It's okay to say you don't know.
Absolutely.
We don't know.
There's so much going on out there that, you know, let's face it, we're all learning all the time. So.
Well, I can tell you, as you know, at that time, I'd probably been a firefighter 18 years. I'd been teaching probably for two. I was scared shitless that day. I'm not going to lie. Of working with you. I just didn't want to mess up.
Well, think about that. Okay. And see, that's one of the things you want to look for in a person.
Yeah.
And, you know, because if you think I wasn't watching, I was.
Oh, over the last 2 years, I've learned that you see everything.
So, yeah. Even though my eyes are almost 68 years old, yes, they do.
They see everything. And they also hear everything, surprisingly.
And I've got bad ears, too.
I know. I think you know somebody that can help you with that.
Yeah.
So that got us together, and I think you asked me to join probably within the next 2 weeks. And I joined Strategic Fire right around November, right around Thanksgiving of 2018. And it's been a blast ever since.
Yeah, it has.
Got to travel the country and get to run with Micah and some great guys. And then, you know, I always believe if you truly love something, your passion is going to come through. And it's what endears people to you. And, it's, you know, I know that when you're talking engine stuff, you love it. And it tells me everything I need to know about you. And the only thing that I love almost as much as I love engine stuff is, you know, beside my family, of course, is Sons of the Flag. And I've been a part of that since 2014. So, you know, you and I started talking about Sons of the Flag. You know, you told a story the other night on Elkhart Brass Tacks and Hard Facts where you had gotten a burn and they thought you smelled like a barbecue pit and they thought somebody was barbecuing in the ER and it turned out to be you. And I know you don't like talking about it, but, you know, we don't need to go into it, but you have dealt with burns over your career and you know how they feel. And, so you were endeared to Sons of the Flag and that's where we came up with the idea. Hey, if everywhere we go, if we can make a little money for Sons, spread the good word, it works out. Now the reason you're on the show today, you also have thank you to Fire Engineering for giving us this opportunity, and thank you for making the Sons of the Flag podcast possible. But I think Sons of the Flag, we have the number two or number three show for the month. I don't know. Landon can tell me all the numbers, but there's one guy I can't beat. There's two shows I can't beat, or one show I can't beat. It's got two guys on it. It's called The Senior Man. And no matter what I do, I can't beat that show. So I finally figured out a way to beat that show. I'm going to have the senior man come on my show.
Part of it, right. Yeah. If you can't beat it, then become a part of it.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that's you and Bob Pressler. And y'all do great shows. I love listening to them. So much information and knowledge about the fire service on that. But you know what you never talk about, sir? You never talk about being a senior man. You talk about how y'all would attack fires, and it's more of a fire tactics class or shows. And sometimes you talk about it and you go off on sidetracks. But today I kind of wanted to focus on what it takes to be a senior man on a team. And I think, you know, that's one of your nicknames, the senior man. And at 47 years, there's no question about it. So today I want to take you through a couple statements. Let me know your thoughts. We're also, if you want to throw anything you want, you can. You want to talk about integrity, loyalty. I know loyalty is one of the biggest things that we at Sons of the Flag have, and I know Strategic Fire Training has. And you were loyal to a fault to your guys. And was that the same at Cleveland?
Early on, as you see today, and this isn't only where I'm from, I think it's a thing across the country. The old bosses had that thing about needing loyalty from those people coming on. And not you're being loyal to them. If you were loyal to your bosses, fine, but loyal to the job. That's the thing that we're getting at here. Okay. You probably heard me say before that when I come on a job in 74, like my one buddy, and I'll give his name. I didn't give it the other night, you know, Jimmy Mendelera and I worked together and in the 70s and him and I, you know, have stayed in touch and he's down in Florida. I'm up here. And you know, it's like when we come on a job, the bosses and the older firefighters, you know, World War II, Korean War, they grew up during the Depression. Their families had that family cohesiveness for the most part. They had to survive. So that means they had discipline. And so as these gentlemen went to war, came home, and were fortunate enough to get on the job, man, they had, you know, like I said the other night, they hit the lottery. Even though the job was so much different then, because you had day on, day off, day on, day off. It wasn't like the hours that firefighters work today. And I think it was, it might have been 72-hour work weeks. So, you know, I remember old guys telling you the story that, you know, every morning you were in the firehouse kitchen going off or coming on duty because you're day on, day off, day on, day off, stuff like that. When it came to the job, there was procedures, there was principles, and you followed them. And because that's the way the job was, you followed them. And so you had things set up that when you hire new people into the job, you have a probationary period. And for some places it was 6 months, and some places it's a year. Ours, mine was a year. And during that time, your probationary period is there to find out if you are there to be part of the job or not. And so these guys could be very tough on you, you know, but you were expected to learn the things of the job, what you were expected to learn for the operation of the department in that first year on a job. So, you know, that's the way you have the disciplines and the respect and so forth for the job, because, you know, it's like we said in the past, you worked, you took a test, you went through a medical background, you took a physical fitness test and whatever other background checks and whatever you went through to get the job. Why would you want to blow that by being a schmuck, you know?
And that's one of the nicer, that's one of the nicer words I've heard you call.
Well, yeah, I'll probably loosen up on my language here as the show goes on. Okay. So I would say jack off or fuckhead or something like that, you know, but anyways, yeah. And that's, you know, like there was a guy in my firehouse, he was gone. He didn't fit the bill. Hey, you know, it's the way it is, you know, or the way it was and so forth. So, and but anyway, yeah. And so, and the other thing is, too, when you have a system in place, informal, formal, combination of those, you're trying to protect the future of the job, too. So when these young firefighters come into the job now, understand that they're coming into a system and they're there to learn it, to protect it, and things like that. Someday they will be the senior people in the department. They will be the officers of the department. And you want to protect that, because if not, then you're going to have problems down the road. You'll have personnel problems. You'll have problems within, problems on the outside, everything like that. So yeah.
So go back to your, if you can, go back to your rookie year. You show up at the firehouse. One fireman, you go on a call, and one of the other firefighters tell you to follow the senior man.
Oh, yeah.
How long did that last for you?
Well, Neil was the senior man. We're going down the road one night, you know, and a company calls in, working fire ahead of us. And so we're going down there, turning the corner, And I look over the engine at him. By the way, in a closed cab back then, okay, it wasn't a four-door cab like today's enclosed cabs. You had a roof overhead, but you know the guys in the back jump seats, they were exposed to the elements out there, minus that roof. But the roof was over you, but that was it. So
it wasn't heated or air conditioned, was it?
Well, didn't work either way. So I look over the hood at Neil, and Neil was a guy who come on, I think, in 66. You know, so he was an old timer.
66, so it's what, 74? He's got what, 8 years, 9 years?
Yeah, this is fall of 74. So I says, hey, what do we do when we get there? He goes, hey. And he looks over at me and ever so calm, he just says, follow the senior man. You see, you're on an engine. And that's the other thing about a senior member who's giving you just a simple statement that you got to remember. We're in an engine. Okay, engines work as teams. Team to get the water on the fire or get the water to the fire, whatever your engine is, first do, second do, third do, whatever, and how you fit into the plan. And you can't do that work as an engine crew when you're running helter-skelter all over the fire ground. That doesn't help get anything done. So those words, back in 1974, follow the senior man, Neil and I still have coffee to this day. Every few weeks. In fact, he just called me up a couple weeks ago. We were on the way home from our daughters, and we just started talking. And we said, we've got to do it soon here, you know, despite all this whatever 19 stuff it is. But still in contact with him all these years later.
So did you view Neil as your senior man?
Yeah, and that's one of the things I got to say about a senior man, okay, is that – the senior man didn't have to work the same shift as you. Okay?
Yes, sir.
It's just someone who you can go to, ask things of, and other things like that, you know, maybe end up doing stuff with and so forth. And, you know, it's one of those titles that I think is embracing anybody who helps you to become better, to become more into or help you to develop professionally, personally, and stuff like that.
I think you just answered my next question. It says, you know, every fire department has a senior man.
Oh, yeah.
Every fire company needs one. Now, I mean, do you have to have them per company or a senior, you know, what is the senior man in the station? You know, is it company level? Is it station level? Is it, you know?
That depends on your department. You see, if you come from a traditional style department that has engine companies, ladder companies, squad companies, and things like that, and then you just have a firehouse, which today you're working the ladder, next day you're working the engine, next day you're on the tailboard, day after that you're driving or something like that. You know, that's the whole thing about company concept. You generally look, if you're a young firefighter on an engine, I would venture to say you generally start looking at somebody on your engine because those are the guys you're going to work with at alarms and so forth. You may have somebody in the firehouse from another crew, another company, or another shift, as we mentioned, that, you know, you feel pretty comfortable around. You guys sit down, talk fire with you, you know, and talk about the past and, you know, and so forth, help you along, you know, and, you know, that's the thing, you know, just, you know, the way it happens sometimes. So,
yeah, too.
Tell you what, you want to know about a senior man from a long distance relationship?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. If you know about my background with Aaron Fields.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not everybody may know that. I know it. Do you want to tell the story about the Book of Shoot?
Well, yeah, sure. I can give you that. Back about 2002, sometime in that era, you know, I was with the old group and we were out in
the old group. That's Andy's group, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Andy Fredericks.
Yep. And we were out in Sacramento doing FDIC West, and there was a young firefighter there who was attending our, you know, hose line class or fire attack class, standpipe class, having some issues with the line. So I, you know, let the other instructors go on there, and I went with this young man and worked with him for a little bit on nozzle mechanics and things like that, you know, and was talking about some things, just matter of fact, just like we're doing here. And after about, oh, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes or so, he went back into the group, and I went, you know, with the other students, and that was it. And about 8 years later, I get a call from Ted Corp Randy, who, him and Paul Schuler at that time, they were Fire Nuggets.
Yes, sir.
And Ted calls me up and he says, hey, Jeff, there's a guy who wants to, you know a little bit or give you a call or talk to you or something like that. I said, oh, yeah. He says he was a student of yours before and years ago. And so it was, I says, oh, what's the guy's name? He says, Aaron Fields. He's from Seattle. I said, oh, really? I don't recall. Yeah, he said he was in one of your classes out in California. I said, oh, okay, that narrows it down, because we had a couple times in Sacramento, and we were in L.A. one time. So, and then after that, and that was about 2010. Yeah, so Aaron started getting out there and getting popular with his class and so forth. So there were times when I would get text messages or some kind of communication or even a phone call from someone who said, hey, I took this class from a guy by the name of Aaron Fields, and he always cites you as his mentor or one of his mentors. And you know, we thought that's kind of neat. I asked, well, where is he from? And they said, Seattle, all the way across the country. And I said, okay, all right. So anyways, as it turned out, you know, Aaron and I reconnected. And one of the guys who's taken a couple of his classes was Jeff Diedrich when Aaron was doing his class here in Eastern United States. And he took it a couple of times. He says every time Aaron would start the class by talking to them, he'd always cite Jeff Shoup as a mentor, as one of his people that he looked up to and so forth. Well, Jeff says, hey, you're talking about Jeff Shoup from Cleveland, Ohio. He says, yes, I am. He says, well, he was my instructor in rookie school back in 94. And Jeff was in the community college fire program and so forth back then. And so next thing you know, these guys are, you know, getting their selves together. So Aaron, along with his guys from Nozzle Forward, Jeff Diedrich, John Mateer, and all those guys.
And the general. Don't forget the general.
I was just going to say, they conspired, along with my wife, the general, as her nickname is, to go through my old boxes and so forth and put all this information into the form of a book. And so Aaron calls me up, and I think it's like 2016. And he says, hey, Jeff, it's Aaron Fields. I was going to wait, but I decided it's going to come out here pretty shortly. You're going to find out about it. So I got to tell you, we've got something for you. I said, oh, really? What's this? And who's we? So here he told me that they had put the book of Shoup together. And you see, that's when that came out, I was just stunned at number one, anybody would go that far, especially for me, to do something of that nature, to take my work and take my other things and so forth and put them all into a book and then put them out there. And to me, that you just can't get anything better in that regards. So from that point, or the point to be taken from that, is when you're an instructor, when you're a senior man, when you're out there and somebody comes to you, especially, you know, someone who doesn't have your background, doesn't have your experience or your knowledge or whatever, they're coming to you, they're trying to get something from you to help them. You know, there's a shall I say, a duty of respect, and that respect is a two-way street, because if they're respecting you enough to come to you, show them that respect in return and help them. Because, you know, if you're an instructor in particular, as a fire instructor, you never know who the next Aaron Fields is who might be sitting in front of you down the road. And wouldn't it be nice if one of those people did that same thing for you someday? And again, I keep saying it over and over and over again. Every time I see Aaron or talk to him, I have to thank him. Thank you, Aaron. Thanks. I really appreciate it, you know. So,
for those that don't know, what Aaron did compile, the Book of Shoop, and what the guys that conspired with him and got involved in all the shenanigans behind Jeff's back was it. They took every article he wrote for Fire Engineering over the years and anything he had a part in writing, some of his studies on SCBAs and PASS devices, everything together, and put it all at one location. And, you know, you got to give Aaron, I've had the pleasure of knowing him for a couple years. He's a class act, because not only did he, and I know this means a lot to you, he didn't take your stuff and use it. He uses it, but he took it and he gives you credit for it. And he cites his sources. And that's where integrity comes in.
Oh, my God, yes. Oh, that's huge today. Yeah, we all know the same stories, you know, and so forth. And, you know, again, Aaron, when he goes out there, yeah, he puts it out there and he says, you know what, these are my people. These are my mentors. This is my senior man. This is, you know, and it's great. And he says, you know what, and he blasts it out there too, you know. Don't take somebody else's material. Don't take somebody else's background. And don't try to take that and pass it off as your own. You know, again, that's like you said, that's the integrity of a person right there. You know, again, that was the thing about like coming on the job. And as I started getting into instructing or the articles, the early articles for Fire Engineering, and that was, they wanted you to cite your sources, you know, put together the bibliography at the end of your article, like where you got this from, where you got that from, and so forth. If you're going to make a point and it's someone who's already had something published or has already been out there preaching that, put their name in there, you know, as, you know, Andy Fredericks would say, you know, this, that, or, you know, whatever. And if you were doing an article where you were using something like some testing data or something like that, put it where you find it, or where you found it, I'm sorry, you know, stuff like that, so where other people can say, oh, okay, yeah, you know, there's nothing wrong with citing somebody else as long as you give that person the credit for where they got it from. You know, I like to think that, you know, that's something we need to get back into, you know,
and, you know, I did very few classes by myself. And the good news is now I don't have to talk at any of the classes. I don't have to get up and give the lecture portion because we got you to do that. Nobody wants to hear me talk when they can hear you. But I always kind of said, look, guys, I'm a hybrid of a bunch of people that had a positive effect on my life. And this is just my screwed up way of putting information that they gave me. I can't tell you what came from who. I've been doing this 20 years. But I do know that these people are who gave them to me. And this is just my take on what they told me. And this is how I use it. And so there's a little bit of me mixed in there, a little bit of Shoop mixed in there. It's just, you know, but even then I was citing sources.
I got one for you. Okay. So a couple of weeks ago, remember, I was one of those young kids who fell into the job early on. And I got to meet a gentleman just before I got on the job, you know, just before I was hired. His name was Parker Brown. And boy, I'll tell you what, you talk about a wizard. And he was hired by Akron Brass in 1967 because the guy was just, you know, brilliant. He was hired as one of their product engineers. And he designed the turbojet nozzle.
Okay.
Akron Brass, once again, is right down the road from where I live here. You know, Akron Brass, you know, they did move the factory down to Worcester years and years ago. But they're still making all that stuff there and what have you. So as I got to meet Parker and listened to him talk, and I was watching, because again, I grew up in Canton, Ohio, you know, and that, he spent a lot of time there. Canton was a 10-engine, three-ladder fire department. Tom Kilcullen, God rest his soul, you know, he was a training chief there, and I was there to able to stand with them, you know, while they were drilling the companies and listen to this and learn stuff from this guy. And so when I talked to him a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about his past and so forth with Akron Brass and this whole area, I tell him, I says, you know, Parker, believe it or not, you go with me everywhere I go. And he started laughing because he knew what I meant. Because I remember him giving me the formulas for 1.5", 3/4", and 2.5". And how he talked about the design of the turbojet nozzle. And, you know, I know a lot of people, you know, are concerned about, you know, how you rotate a nozzle and so forth. And one of our team members, Jerry Knapp, when he was on Brass Tacks Hard Facts a couple weeks ago, he talked about, you know, my thing, Jeff Shoup's thing is you want to go clockwise. And that's where I picked up that thing many years ago about the spinning teeth on a nozzle. Mm-hmm. You know, they go clockwise. All to force that environment in front of you and things like that. It's those things in your past that you learn from somebody and you talk about, you know, the force and the pressure and things like that. And yeah, I can say this gentleman, Parker Brown, is still around. He just lives down the road from me. And to talk to him, I think he appreciated, and I hope he did anyhow, when I said, you go with me every time I go out. Because if I talk about a hydraulics formula, it's yours that I show to people. And stuff like that. And it's that simple.
And so, you know, and I think it's cool. And, you know, you talked about long distance senior man mentorship with you and Aaron. And over the last 2 years, I've experienced it. Cause I can't tell you how many times you've helped me, you know, where I have a fire and we come back, we talk about it. Hey, what do we do? What went wrong? What went right? You know, and the relationship's invaluable. But let's kind of switch back to at the station, you know. What are your views of the responsibilities of the senior man? And I know you're not the senior man at Station 11 anymore. It's John Mateer now. And
John's one of the senior guys.
And I know he's out there every day flowing hose. So what do you view the responsibilities are for the senior man?
Well, first of all, provide a positive persona. You know, one of the things about me, like, I'm that little kid from 8 years old looking at the tiller truck, you know, and then years later being able to achieve my goal to be a fireman. Okay. So if you've asked to become part of this great profession, it's always best to carry that attitude throughout your career. And believe me, we've all been through hard times. We've all been through low times. We've all been through setbacks and things like that. We've all had problems, you know, with things outside the fire service and so forth. But if you can walk in, and again, you know, it's one of those things that if you can be the senior guy and you've got a positive attitude, you can joke around and enjoy the job and so forth. And there's a lot of guys out there who are still like that. God bless them, you know, and so forth. But, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, Jesus, God, this guy's got 35 years on, man. He's still going strong. He's still fighting you for the nozzle and stuff like that. That's cool as hell, you know. And
go ahead.
And you'd be surprised who notices that. And one of the things we talked about the other night was that crew, that mediocre crew of firefighters. And let's just say that senior or older firefighter transfers in to senior man. And it's a guy with a, you know, a pretty good attitude and so forth. And the thing is, maybe those members of that engine is just mediocre, you know, is looking for somebody like that guy.
Need a spark.
Yeah, exactly. And that's all it takes. You might be that guy. You, Chad Groover. Pull the, you know, what does it, you know, what, you know, number one, go out, like I've said before, go out, pull your line every day. Okay. Stretch a couple hundred feet, go over nozzle mechanic, pump pressures, and see what it's like. Hey, if we turn the line this way, we got to make a left turn here. We got to make a right angle here. We got to do a 180. Do that out in the parking lot or behind the firehouse, you know? And it takes a 20-minute period out of your 24-hour day. Mm-hmm. But you've done it. You've done it. You've had your tools in your hands. You've used it. You've developed your skills and kept them that much.
You know, and I hate to say, and it's one of the very few things I say when we teach together, because I don't really like giving away the secret, because it really does not take a lot of work to be above good. Average at this. I mean, it doesn't take a lot of work to be good. It just takes minimum effort and just go out 15 to 20 minutes a day.
Right.
You do that 10 times a month, you've done 3 hours of training a month on hose lines.
And you didn't even have to record it.
No.
But if you do record it, I mean, everybody's, oh, yeah, we got all that. No, man, you're doing it because it's easy to do. It feels good. You're being a firefighter. When you have your firefighting tools in your hand, it's just that simple.
You know, I've always said, and I don't know where I heard it from, but the truck guys, they start their saws every morning, make sure they work. So why the hell would I not pull my hose line, make sure it's going to pull right, flow right? Why wouldn't I do the same thing on the engine? That's the most important thing you can do on an engine is your water.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take that long. And then, you know, in my experience, I know I've done it where I'm the only one out there doing it. And then slowly another person comes, and then two turns into three, and it starts that culture that you have in your house and of your engine company.
Right.
Here's kind of a weird question for you. Can the senior man be the officer?
I guess so. Yeah.
But a lot of times it's different.
If you're looking for a senior man to be just a firefighter, in a lot of cases, a senior firefighter can be the leader of the crew informally. The company officer is the formal officer in charge of the crew. But when you have a senior firefighter who's got his background, got his persona, got the guys believing in him, listening to him and so forth. Number one, if that officer has any brains about himself, he'll let that senior man take care of the company for him. And that's a good thing for him.
This goes back to your story about God.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah, we had the God Squad, and I was just a youngster on the God Squad. And I mentioned that the other night, too, about, you know, when I was a youngster there, the captain comes up to me and says, son, my company is all handpicked. You're new here, and you're not going to be here very long because, you know, I have rotations and so forth. But if you have a problem, you take it to my senior men because they run my company for me. And if they can't take care of your problem and it gets to me, you've got a real big problem. And
that left an impression on you because we still hear that story.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Some 50 years later.
Well, not that long.
It's almost. I'm rounding up.
Right, yeah.
I'm rounding up. So talk about that a little bit. What's the relationship, you know, between the officer? If the officer is not the senior man, how does that relationship go? You know, if the guys are listening to the senior man and he's not the officer, is there, you know, what's that relationship need to be like between that officer and the senior man?
Man, like I said before, hopefully that officer is smart enough to realize he's got a gem with a senior man who's doing all that stuff for him. All he's got to do is support the senior man and let the senior man run with that. And you're going to have guys who are responsive to the senior man. Again, like we talked about, if there's a problem within, hey, they talk to the senior men. And if the senior man says, maybe we could take care of this. Or if it's a little bit more involved, more deep or whatever, well, then we may have to talk to the company officer. But it's like a filter system too, you know? So, you know, it's like, let's say you got four people on an engine Okay, you got two young people on the back step, and you've got two young guys who want to have the nozzle in their hands. Well, they go to you. Well, what do you say about this? If the department doesn't have an SOP that defines company positions within that engine, then you might have the guys, you know, duking it out behind the engine, you know, seeing who's going to get the nozzle and take it in. And really, it can come right down to the senior man and says, tell you what we're going to do here. This is the way it's always been. So we'll say precedence or past protocol, whatever you want to call it, where the senior man says, I tell you what, if it's on your side, you take the nozzle. And then the guy on the other side does the stretching work and the backup work. If it's on his side, he will take the nozzle and you will do the backup and the stretching work. And that way you got a win-win because either guy has the opportunity to get the nozzle. Either guy has the opportunity to see the other part of fire attack with the hose line work and so forth. And then you direct them as a senior man about how you're supposed to do it. And this is where your drills in the morning, like we were just talking about, play out. So you go pull out the engine, you know, go over stretching. Each guy takes the nozzle and his working length while the other guy does the stretching, and then pack it away and then do it with the other guy in that position and so forth.
That gets into where you have to bribe the driver as to which route he takes.
Well, that's true too. That's
Hey, can you make it to where it's on my side this time, please?
That's a good thing. Like I said, if you've got young firefighters, you can get into their minds early, and you know they can. You can give them something to remember, something to develop themselves along the way with. Wow, you got yourself a good situation there.
Yes, sir. Is the senior man at the station? Is he always the oldest? Just because he's the oldest, is he the senior man?
God, good question.
Seniority, I mean, maybe seniority wise.
But. No, I got to tell you, you know, I've seen people, I've been around people in the past who were senior, but they were senior in time only. They never were going to sit down with you. They weren't going to talk about things, you know, with you or something like that. They just did their thing, did their flop, as we say, and that was it. Someone with a few years less, you could go to that person, and they would help you. They would talk. They would, you know, be with you at a fire and stuff like that. So, yeah, you know. I hope I answered that question. That you
I believe you did. I mean, the senior man, the way I understand it, the title is not – it's the name comes from your actions, not your time on.
It's an informal title.
Yeah, it's an informal title. But, you know, it's not so much a title that's given out of time, but it's a title by giving out of actions. And if you – and you're doing the right thing.
And would you say – it's a title that if they recognize, if the people recognize you as he's a senior man and they're saying that in a respectful way.
Oh, that's a good thing.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. He's our senior man. He's this, he's that, whatever, you know,
it's a good thing. Now, Justin Bemis asked me this question this morning. And we have so many fire departments down here in Texas that don't have the 80 to 100 year time. We have very young communities popping up here. We have young fire departments. Yeah. Just because my fire department is young and some of the guys only have, like the most senior man only has 10 years experience. Or our oldest guy on the department has 8 years on the job. Is he considered a senior man? What do you do with an inexperienced department like that?
Oh, wow. I feel for those departments because I'll tell you why. I saw the same thing when I was down in the Carolinas, that you had, because of the high turnover, you had people coming in, you know, being hired and so forth. They spend half a dozen years or so, and another opportunity comes along in another fire department somewhere, they're off. So you have a revolving door, and that's a hard thing because a lot of those younger firefighters are looking for something. They're looking for like traditions to follow. Good, bad, or otherwise, traditions are the way we do business. It's like a cultural thing, okay? You know, fire departments that have had longstanding traditions, especially good traditions I'm talking about, you know, they have continuity among their crews. They have a system that's in place and not being challenged by some court action or something like that. It's one that's been developed and refined over time, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That can define them as, yeah, that's a good operation over there. Those guys are really good at what they do. They know their jobs and so forth. They're and whatever it is, you know, their persona is. Yeah, you know, I come from the Rust Belt, and the Rust Belt means a part of the country where your old industrial, you know, scene was very heavy during that time in our country's history, the Industrial Revolution. You know, you got your Buffaloes, your Clevelands, your Detroits, you know, your Gary, Indiana's, your Chicago's, and so forth. Youngstown, Pittsburgh, and all those places. A lot of steel mill production, a lot of manufacturing jobs and things like that. Well, fire departments, you know, if you were able to escape the warehouses and steel mills or a place like that and get a job in the fire department, you know, you kept that forever, that job. So that, you know, also with those guys staying in there that time and learning their jobs, their neighborhoods and things like that, that's all part of that, you know. You know, what am I looking to say? That strive for.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
All right. Which would you rather have, experience or education?
You set me up.
Yeah, that's a loaded question, I know.
Okay, it is. You know why?
You have to have a hybrid of both.
You do, but to me, I've gotten both, mm-hmm. You know. I went to University of Cincinnati, and before I went to University of Cincinnati, I went and got my associate's degree from a local community college, fire technology. And University of Cincinnati, you know, that's they have the four-year program there. By the way, Bobby Morris of New York, him and I were classmates together there. I want to say it was 89, 90, something like that, and so forth, you know. And that program there, when they started those open learning fire service programs, I think there was like 7 across the country. University of Maryland, Empire State, University of Cincinnati, Memphis, and I don't know what they had. There was a couple out west, I think, that offered those programs. It was important to me because I always wanted to be professional. I wanted to know as much as I could, you know, all that other stuff, do what I could do. And you know, but the experience, that's heavier than the education. And it's important. Don't get me wrong. I've made my investment in that also. But which one's more important? Yeah, it's not 50-50. You know, experience is a great teacher. And yes. I'm sure we've heard that.
I think Jerry Herbst said it a couple of weeks ago. Our job's the only job where you might have the test before you have the lesson.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. Yeah.
That really struck a chord with me.
Yeah.
I mean, so. I've learned from my experience, I've learned what not to do most of the time.
Yeah. You know, it's an interesting thing with somebody who has a lot of education but not any experience. They're trying to throw it up in the face of a person who's got a ton of experience.
But not a lot.
It's like, no, it's not really the streets.
Yeah. So,
it's just like hydraulics. Let me give you an example of hydraulics. Okay. Again, Parker Brown, who I was telling you about earlier, you know, he is a wizard. When I started for my associate degree, and that was, right when I was getting on a job. So that was, went through early and mid 70s. And we had a tremendous hydraulics instructor. He says, there's two types of hydraulics out there. One is the one you're going to need, and that's going to be out in the street. And the other one is your exact formulas. And those are the things that you see on your promotional exams. You know, nothing about the streets. Who's going to sit out there and while the fire's burning, huh?
Figure out what the square root of 29.7 diameter square.
All that stuff. Or yeah. We'll figure out the coefficient of how the water comes up and then makes a right turn and goes out through the hydrant barrel. You know, yeah. It's like, come on. This is your, and he was right. And so he was a guy who made a big impression on me. That was Dick Knopf. And he could just explain it. And, you know, it was just right on, you know. Yeah. And that's what we teach when we go out and we're doing our class, our classes. We talk about staying with 50 PSI nozzle pressure because we know that works. That's been the design criteria of a solid bore nozzle ever since the 1800s when John Freeman was doing it. It's interesting now that, and we didn't get to talk much about the design of nozzles. I know Chris Martin asked me, what would be my go-to or wow nozzle? You know, the other night when we were doing brass tacks and hard facts, and I was like, oh my God, everybody knows I like solid bore. I've had my experience with fog nozzles. I have been steamed like a lobster, like thousands of other firefighters have been. You know, when we come on back then, you were taught fog nozzles, 30 degree, get in there, open it up, whip it around. And guess what? You got steamed like a lobster. Number one, turnout gear wasn't like it is now, fully encapsulating. And number two, you were dependent on the truck work. And if the truck work wasn't happening ahead of the fire attack, generally that steam had to go somewhere. And remember, fog nozzles on a wide angle setting, and the wider you get it, the more of a low pressure point you create at that tip, you can suck that environment right down on you.
Yeah.
Take a look at the turnout gear we had. You didn't have wristlets in a coach. You didn't have hoods. So a lot of guys learn the hard way. Once again, experience. You can tell me things that you learn in a class or learn from a study, but street experience is it. Same thing with our hydraulics. Teach me 50 PSI at the nozzle and what it takes to approximately get that. So I've got manageability to be able to throw as much water as I can to kill the fire and protect me and my crew. That sounds pretty simple. And that's what we do when we go out there.
I think, and, you know, like I said, I've only been with you for, been traveling with you for almost 2 years now. I think today people are looking for one simple answer. And the simple answer, you keep it simple, but there's not one answer that fits all. There's not one definite number. Even when we just do 50 PSI at the tip, our flows are never going to be the same. There's too many variables. Right. And people are trying to black and white it, and there's no black and white it. There's always a ish, and you just get close.
you see, all this stuff about all this, you know, certain diameter hose and all this stuff that's coming out now for this or that, and overpumping, underpumping, all that – It's all gobbledygook from my perspective. I think from our perspective also, because again, you stay with what gets you there. If it's a solid bore nozzle, it's a 50 PSI nozzle. All you have to do is during a fire, have hoses of different ages and maybe different materials within that 200 foot stretch. All you have to do is have an engine today you're using that has three elbows coming off the pump discharge manifold,
or something messes up with the automatic pressure governor.
Bingo. See, there's too many variables along the way. So the thing is, you just keep it simple. 50 for the nozzle. If it's 1¾-inch hose, we're going to tell them maybe 20 pounds friction loss per 50-foot length. If it's too much, you got a radio, don't you? Hey, back it down 10 pounds, engine. Simple command like that. If you need more, well, that's the same thing.
But need more.
Yeah, exactly. You know, no, there is no one size fits all. There is no one thing. And we're getting into the ballpark. That's what we're trying to do. So get a design of a nozzle, or get a flow design of a nozzle and hose that gives you the biggest bang for the buck.
Yeah. Always take your biggest bang.
Right, for sure. you never know when things are going to go from black to orange.
No. You know, you sit there and you say that and keep it simple, but I don't want you to give you, I don't want you to give away too much of your golden stuff, but you said 20 for inch and three quarter. Go ahead and give the, for those that are learning from us today, go ahead and give the 2 inch and the 2.5 numbers.
Well, figure about 6 pounds, you know, for 2.5 for a 50-foot length.
And then
and for 2 inch, 12 to 15 PSI.
But
again, a lot of that is going to come down to the age and the materials.
Are
hoses, you know, are made out of.
You know, we had hose up where we were in Olympia and the hose was delaminating and our flow sucked.
Oh yeah.
And you know, and I think you said Bob taught you that there's two types of hydraulic formulas that you need. The ones that get you the job, the promotional, and then the ones you're going to use in the field. Is that the right person? Do I give credit to Bob Knopf?
No, Dick Knopf.
Dick Knopf.
Richard Knopf. Right.
And you know, I mean, you can do all these calculations, and in the field, there's no, you know, it's like, I'm like, and guys ask me, what are you going to pump to this? I go, well, I'm going to pump until I get them the water they need. You know, I can't tell you. It depends on what my hydrant is. How much pressure am I going to have to put behind it? You know, if I can get them, I don't go to a certain PSI. I go to a flow and PSI combination. You know, I have flow meters on all my engines, on my crossways. If I get them in the ballpark, it's never going to be for your 15th, 16th. It's not ever going to all dial in at 185.
No.
Because you know what? It's also dependent on how many kinks are in the hose, that they're, how's their hose management? Is the guy half bailing the thing? You know, is he moving? Is he half bailing while he's moving?
Yep.
You know, I know we teach never to fully close the nozzle, but you know, we always have it at least half bailed until all the fire is gone.
Right.
But there's just way too many variables. And that's where I love your message of keep it simple.
Yeah. Because the fire is going to make it complex enough for you.
I'll let you have that punchline. Well, Jeff, is there anything else? We've been on for about an hour now. Anything else you want to go over? Anything you want to tell the fire service?
Well, you mentioned keeping it simple. And that way, like we said, fire is going to make it complex enough for you. But not only calculating pump pressures, but your hose beds.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's the other thing.
You know, that's another part of being a, you know, a senior man. How long, like you said, your hose beds, keep those simple. But, you know, one of the questions I ask when guys come up, I go, y'all know how long this hose bed is? You know, how many feet are in my hose bed? You know, is it a 12-foot hose bed? So each flap is 24 feet. So if I grab one fold, I've got 24, two folds, I've got a 50. And, you know, it's kind of like it's an art that's being lost, I'm afraid.
Oh, it is. You know, I think what happened, again, what, you know, I mentioned it, oh God, was it me and Jeff? We were doing one of the barn talks and I was throwing out there, if you throw out, go or walk, let's just say walk into a firehouse, say, hey, show me your trip or your triple combination engine. They look at you like, huh?
Yeah, either that or they're going to show you a Quint.
Right, exactly. Take a look at today's engines and how they've morphed over time into something other than what they were originally intended to be. You know, you had a couple of years ago this craze about taking the ladders off the officer side of the engine and creating a ladder box in the hose bed. Well, how stupid is that? And I say stupid because if you have to have high side cabinets on the officer side along with the high side cabinets on the driver's side, well, then go with an overhead ladder rack, but don't take away from your hose bed. How ridiculous are we getting? The rescue engine, it's got to do this, or the squad engine, it's got to carry this, that, and the other thing. You know what we're also saying when we make those statements? You need another apparatus then. There's a lot of departments that, you know, have said, you know what, we're going to get a four-door, you know, medium-duty chassis, put a small box on the back of it, put the tools in there if we need them. Mm-hmm. Let them follow the engine if we have a car accident or something like that. But when you're putting everything in the engine, well, next thing you know, you need a tandem axle engine for all the compartments and all the equipment it's carrying for stuff that's other than firefighting stuff.
You know, and I think about it, and, you know, I've heard you talk about your war wagons that you had.
Yeah.
And, you know, surprisingly, I've been on a spec committee, and the war wagons are cheaper to build than the ones that carry everything.
Oh, hell yeah, they are. Absolutely, they are. There's a department up the road here. They bought a new engine last year. And when you take a look at the price of the other engines around the area that are over $625,000 for an engine, and these guys bought, they got a lot of basics on it, and they paid, I think, $445,000. Wow, how about that? So it can be done. We can get away, and by the way, I haven't heard of any bad things coming out about how they purchased this engine after they spec'd it. My gosh, it does work.
They kept it simple.
Yeah, exactly. So,
well, Jeff, I can't thank you enough. Real quick, you know, you mentioned Aaron Fields in the Book of Shoot, and I know I wanted to say where you can get that. You can get it on Strategic Fire's website. You can get it on Aaron Fields' Nozzle Forward website. I know we say this everywhere we go. If somebody tries to make you pay for it, please contact us and tell us, because you give that away for free, right?
Yes.
And we have an event coming up next week, don't we?
We do.
We have a class, don't we?
We do.
On May 28th, we have a class benefiting Sons of the Flag. You are going to be doing a Zoom conference. I'm still nervous over how this is going to go. And that's on me, just as much me, because we're going to try to hold a classroom session over Zoom.
Yeah.
And you're going to be doing what? 25 tips for the aggressive engine company.
Yeah. 25 operating tips for engines. And
you've had this one for a while, haven't you?
I have. I put this stuff together back in, oh my God, I want to say mid 2000s. And a couple of places where I got this information, number one, my own background, you know, my department, and also people like Emmanuel Freed, William Clark, Warren Kimball, because those are people that I researched their work back then. And it was just, you know, following and understanding what they put out there. I thought, holy cow, you know, all this stuff makes so much sense, you know? Extinguishing the fire as you go. Why should that even be an issue? But it is, because we got guys who want to barrel in there all turtled up, and they get the wrong idea of what firefighting is, rather than being systematic when you start your fire attack. And that's one of the things we always teach guys. Start hitting it up high overhead. Don't let the fire get behind you. Extinguish the fire as you go. Manuel Freed. So when I started putting these 25 operating tips for engine companies together, I had a good basis to work from. And so I added a lot of stuff, like I say, that I've experienced in time, and it's working out pretty good, because I did it for fire engineering. You know, when I did Fire Engineering University back, oh God, I think that was 2008 or something like that. You know, so it's been, you know, it's one of those things. It's about the basics. It holds up over time.
I always say, you know, when I look at you, you're not the flavor of the month. You're classic vanilla. Always there, always good. Anyway, that class is going to be May 28th at 1:00. And if you want to buy a ticket, I think tickets are $10. And you will get an email, the Zoom account password the day before the class. And all proceeds go to Sons of the Flag.
Yeah.
So really looking forward to that. Anything, anywhere else you're going to be?
Well, you know where we'll be in the fall.
Yes, sir.
We got a couple of dates coming up. We got Wisconsin coming up in June. So state of Wisconsin and the places up there opening up and so forth. So we've got our training and it's all figured out and everything. We've been going up there. I think this is the third or fourth year we've gone up there. So that's next month.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Glad to get things going again.
Yeah. And we got a couple plays. We might be going down south. I don't know. I got to see what happens, you know, with one of the people, you know, who I've done some work with down in the south before. So, but yeah, we've got Mile High coming up.
Work. I think that's it. That's about it right now until things open up for sure.
That's it. Everything collapsed, you know, but we'll be back. So will the fire service.
You know what? Well, we're not doing any extra. Fire service is still here.
That's right. We're not going anywhere.
Sir, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Oh, the Senior Man Show.
Yes, sir.
You know when your next one's going to be?
I don't. It'll probably be sometime in June.
You just did one last month, so yeah. They're about every other month.
Yeah, so that's about right. So, I'll find out.
Great podcast on Fire Engineering Radio. You can go. I think there's been like 17 of them so far.
No, number 20.
Oh, 20. I'm sorry.
I think it's number 20. We just did the other night.
But incredible resource. And Jeff takes his side of the engine, and Bob Pressler brings a truckie side, and they get in some nice discussions.
And you know, once again, you know, like Bob said, I don't know if it's the last time or the time before. I think it was the last time. He says, you know, we get into these things because we were commenting how many we've done so far. He says, you know, we get into these conversations every time. And you know what? It keeps going right back full circle to the basics. That's what firefighting is.
It's all basic.
Yeah. So.
And, you know, we always joke, you know, we should offer an advanced firefighting class, but there's not one.
Yeah, I wonder why. Because there's no such thing as advanced firefighting. It's all about the basics. So,
well, sir, it has been a pleasure to have you. Thanks you for all you've done for Sons of the Flag. Mm-hmm. And please let us know if we can ever help you.
Hey, and this goes, I know. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Keep the guys from L.A. in your minds and in your hearts.
Yeah, sir. That, you know, that's pretty rough. We've reached out to LA and we are trying to get a hold of them, and
yeah,
as always, Sons of the Flag will be there if they need us. And
yep,
we never come in and try to storm and take credit for it. We just want to be in the background making sure these firefighters can get back to,
yeah,
I promised myself I'd say the new norm, not ever say new normal again after this coronavirus thing, but we want to help the firefighters. If they need us, we will be there, and we will help them get back on their feet.
Yep. Yep. God bless.
Well, you have a great day, sir. Thank you for everything you do.
Oh, hey. Great to be a part of this with you. It's the guts and it's the glory.
100 stripes, 100 stories. Thank you for listening to Sons of the Flag Radio, and we truly hope that you enjoyed tonight's episode with our guest, the true senior man himself, Jeff Shue. If you'd like to listen to other episodes, then log on to Fire Engineering Blog Talk Radio and type in Sons of the Flag, or log on to YouTube and type in Sons of the Flag. If you'd like to support Sons of the Flag or join the team at Sons of the Flag, or would like to see a list of any of our upcoming events, then log on to our website at www.sonsoftheflag.org. Be sure to look us up on all social media by typing in at Sons of the Flag. As always, we thank you for listening. Stay safe, stay passionate, and always keep the mission first.